Good morning, everyone. It is Sunday, January 11th, 2015. Our subject is sacrament. I welcome you all to our morning roundtable. Today we will start with talking about the lesson, sacrament. I wanted to, well, first, before we do that, Florence, while I'm thinking of it, would you just say a few words about the forum?
Oh, okay. Maybe I'll just read the email I sent then. This week, Jeremy sent the statistics of the forum highlights download, and it's really impressive, thanks to God. And I wrote that we can never know to what extent our sharing is helping to change world thought. We are grateful for the technology to be able to gauge what is going on with the forum highlights. And if we look at sharing our inspiration on the forum as serving God and man, perhaps we will have more enthusiasm with what can be gained from the lessons that will keep the forum going. We must all do our part. I love doing putting it together, and thank God for Wendy for her assistance in editing it. I mean, it's like, I think the total was 6,000 downloads in the year 2014, so it's good to know that it's not all in vain.
That's right. It's been getting a lot of people checking in, as do all the things that we're doing. Jeremy's going to give us more statistics about downloads, but those of you who are translating lessons, those, you know, Dear Betty doing the full text faithfully, all of this work is not in vain. People are very, very grateful for it. And I think, as I mentioned, we got someone new from Australia this week, someone else from Oregon, Carla recently from Rochester, New York. So don't ever think the work is in vain, and don't ever think, oh, well, I won't do it today or tomorrow. Please, everything you have to say, everything you write is of value when you're inspired by the Father, of course. So.
And I must say, I got a call from England, too. People who have been following Plainfield since the 70s. In fact, they said they were praying for Plainfield at that time. So you never know, really, how far this is reaching. And it really touches my heart to think that, you know, so long ago, people were following what God has given to be done here. So I think we have to take it more seriously and in humble obedience to what God wants us to do, do it wholeheartedly.
Thank you, Florence. Citation 3 in the lesson this week, in the Bible part, Matthew 20. Who would like to read about the sons of Zebedee for us? If does anyone have the lesson available? Can call on someone here.
I have it up if no one does.
Thank you, Lenny. Go ahead then, please.
You want me to read the whole of
I do.
Three?
Yes, okay. I do.
And Jesus, going up to Jerusalem, took the 12 disciples apart in the way and said unto them, Behold, we go up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man shall be betrayed unto the chief priests and unto the scribes, and they shall condemn him to death. And shall deliver him to the Gentiles to mock and to scourge and to crucify him, and the third day he shall rise again. Then came to him the mother of Zebedee's children with her son, worshipping him, and desiring a certain thing of him. And he said unto her, What wilt thou? She saith unto him, Grant that these my two sons may sit, the one on thy right hand and the other on the left, in thy kingdom. But Jesus answered and said, Ye know not what ye ask. Are ye able to drink of the cup that I shall drink of, and to be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? They say unto him, We are able. And he saith unto them, Ye shall drink indeed of my cup, and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with. But to sit on my right hand and on my left is not mine to give, but it shall be given to them for whom it is prepared of my Father. And when the 10 heard it, they were moved with indignation against the two brethren. But Jesus called them unto him and said, You know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they that are great exercise authority upon them. But it shall not be so among you. But whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister. And whosoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant. Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many.
Thank you. What lessons do we learn from this story? It's interesting, it's in the subject sacrament, and well done for that. Who were the sons of Zebedee first? Who were they? Do you know?
James and John.
And John.
Yes, James and John. Two very well-beloved disciples and well-beloved by Jesus and good workers in the vineyard, so to speak. So what were they asking of Jesus?
Or what was their mother asking?
Yeah, what was their mother asking? You know, it's interesting because I read the version, what Matthew Henry said about it. He said he felt that the mother was put up to it by the boys, and that she was one who was took care of Jesus. You know, Jesus had some women, some people taking care of him, making sure he had food and perhaps at times a place to live, and she was one of them. And they thought, well, if I could get my mother to ask, how could Jesus say no to her? I don't know. I never thought of it that way. I thought it was something coming straight from them, or actually, perhaps it was her personal sense of her son's doing it. But
I kind of wondered if she was tending the regulator there a little bit.
That's what I always thought too. She was trying to put in a good word for these boys of hers. But either way, there's something very unholy about this action, isn't there? So, anyone want to comment on however it was done?
Well,
go ahead, Bruce.
I was going to say, everyone's relationship with the common Father, God, is sacred. And how common it is in this world to rely on someone else, lean on someone else, stay with someone else, whatever, and avoid this issue of establishing firmly, each individually, their relationship with God. And that is what salvation is, not on any personal context.
Thank you. Were you going to say something, Florence?
Oh, essentially the same thing. Like, you know, I think it feels like you're trying to get more than you've worked for.
Yes, yes. I don't know why Uta and Zari are having a hard time coming in.
That's right.
Okay.
Oh, we got you now.
Got you now. Yeah, what Bruce said, either way, whether it was the mother or the two sons, it was a personal sense. If the mother was doing it for the two sons, or if the two sons were getting their mother to do it for them, somehow it was a very unholy way to do anything. For one thing, it showed a cowardice or manipulation, perhaps, but it was not, and certainly definitely a personal sense of the mother and of the son.
There was also possibly a sense of family in there. I believe they were cousins of Jesus.
Right.
And
right.
So that probably didn't help matters either.
True. Thank you, Betty. Yeah. Yeah, whole thing was personal. Go ahead.
Then if it was the mother, which it could have been, not the boys, it shows a total lack of real understanding.
It certainly does. It shows that
for me,
go ahead.
I was going to say, for me too, is that sort of that idea, that ecclesiastum, or the ecclesiastical idea of intercession trying to creep in. Like Jesus is going to intercede and kind of take a couple of favorites or whatever, or it's almost like putting in a good word so that they would sit at the right hand and the left.
Yes.
It's hard to believe that John would have asked it himself, because he was the one that was always said to be the one Jesus loved, the one that was next to him at the... He had so much understanding from what we have from John.
Yes. Yeah, it would seem hard that John would do something like that or even think to do something like that. Although, and there has been controversy other if that was really John, the beloved John, because just for that reason, they wondered if how could that have been, that John. There were a few Johns at that time. Anybody else?
There was a sense of pride. Jesus did all these works and taught and everything, and they felt they were equal to him. And that's pride.
Yes. Yeah, definitely pride. Pride on the mother's part, pride on their part to ask for this. It also showed a great ignorance, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the
ignorance of the position.
Yes.
Yeah, Jesus said, "Ye know not what ye ask." And then exactly. Asked the questions, "Are ye able to drink of the cup that I shall drink of, and to be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" For that they said, "Yes," but then he said, "You may be able to do that, but to sit on my right hand, that is not for anyone to give such a, I mean, it's something, I think, too, so holy that they probably were thinking of in a very wrong way."
Yes.
Yeah, and yet he used it as an opportunity for instruction for them.
And he said, "It is not mine to give, not mine to give." I mean, he didn't have pride himself.
Right. He's as just to say, you can't put me in between your relationship with God. You have to earn
God.
You have to earn it yourself.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to explain how to earn it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
In Matthew Henry, he says, "It is not mine to give to those that seek and are ambitious of it, but to those that by great humility and self-denial are prepared for it." Now, there's a great difference in the two. And if you're asking for any position, really, it's to me a very strange thing, and especially positions like this, or even positions in church, really. God promotes you. When you seek those things, you really don't know what you're asking for. Because they do. It requires taking up the cross and denying self. So,
it makes me think of, I mean, thinking, okay, I'm a Christian Scientist, so when I get sick and I say a few of these, I should be healed, you know, instead of when you've really done the work and understand, then the realization of present perfection is here for everyone. But,
I also see this as, you know, talking about, I mean, competition, human rivalry.
Yes.
And envy and pride.
Yes. Yes. All of those things are at play here. Human ambition, pride, rivalry. In Matthew Henry, and I thought he made some interesting comments, he said that they probably thought, well, they had left everything for the Christ, so now they deserved some sense of honor. And it did bring out, too, they were asking for honor. They weren't asking to work or to do anything. They wanted honor.
And they had nothing to back it up.
They had nothing, no, not at that point. They didn't.
That's what I was thinking, too, because I suspected that there was a sense like, well, we deserve it. You owe it to us.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
Yes.
But remember, you know, the disciples, it says in the Bible, received the Holy Ghost after Jesus' ascension. In other words, they had a lot of growing to do up until the point in time when Jesus left them.
Yes, they did.
Has anybody ever known anyone who petitioned to be elected a reader in their church? Or desired to be on the board, trustees of their church, or campaign to be a practitioner.
Lenny, you said yes.
Oh, yeah. I've known of people at my old church who, you know, felt like they'd been there a long time, they were good Christian Scientists, and couldn't understand why they weren't being elected reader and got a little miffed at it.
Yeah.
If they really knew what they thought they were asking for, really, they may not be asking for it.
Yeah, and I know some of you who have started reading even on Wednesdays. You take up the cross when you do that. You have to deal with all the opposition that comes at you that would try to stop you from doing it. And as you do that, there's tremendous growth because you're learning how to handle animal magnetism. And that does not just go for reading. It really goes for anything that you're doing for the church. There's the opposition. Era doesn't want you to do it. And so when you overcome that and do it anyway, you've grown. And when you grow in this way, you'll grow in every area of your life. So there's great blessing to it. But it's not something you really seek. You do have to be prepared for it. It has to seek you. God promotes you. God will promote you. It will be unfoldment. And it certainly should, is the way it happens in this church. God forbid there be any campaigning for anything. But I do know, I've heard of stories of churches where there was that sort of thing. And in this church as well, years ago.
Yeah, many years ago, we had an experience like that. And one of the people who was miffed made a point of complaining to the board in Boston, and that precipitated our becoming independent.
Yeah, there was actually all that stuff, all that politicking going on, and it has no place in a real science church, no place at all. So these are good lessons, and these are good lessons to ask within ourselves. Now, it also doesn't mean that you always, out of mock humility, don't do anything. But, excuse us, I don't know what's the matter with our connection here.
Our German connection is not doing very well here.
So, anyway, it would be opposition, too, to what's going on here.
That's right. Because if anybody actually aspires for something, it's very suspect. But even if they succeeded, it would interfere with the divine mission. Human will can't take the place of divine guidance.
Yeah.
That's why those that were just so sadly disappointed with their failure complained to Boston. It actually prompted the independence of our church. It was a step forward because human will could not succeed.
Yes, and as we read in the allegory, God, love will remove whatever obstructs the way. That will happen if we're faithfully following God. So, yeah, after having, and it was interesting. Jesus was very loving to them, and as Barely brought out, then it brought out competition among all the other disciples, and everybody wanted to get into it. Why should they have preference over us? So, if any of you ever feel that, even stirring it all within you, make sure you kill it. Certainly not of God. And we saw it also with Mrs. Eddy, didn't we? And with her passing, weren't there those who were wondering who would take her place, who would be the greatest, who would perhaps get all the money? So beware of it, and it's important. I would say it goes with sacrament because this is human ambition. Human ambition. Who shall be the greatest? So, and then what was Jesus' answer to them all?
That the greatest become the servants and the ministers, and not the Lord.
Yes, thank you. Here again, we're back to servants, servitude, the lowly washing of the disciples' feet. And we must all have that in our hearts, whatever position you're holding in the church or elsewhere. We're all servants of God. And I thought the watching point this week spoke well to it, too. It said Jesus might have been called master because above all others, he permitted divine power to master him. So that's the only way to be master, is to have the divine power master you. And that takes extreme humbleness of mind, meekness. Anyone else would like to comment on anything in the lesson?
I would.
Okay, go ahead.
I just have a question. Do you think that the mother of Zebedee's children thought of Jesus as God, like people do now? Not thinking, you know, he's the Son of God. He kept saying he was, but people don't seem to take that in.
Well, I wouldn't think so, but that's just...
Well, we don't know what she thought of him, but it was a personal... There was clearly some personal sense of him, so...
Yeah.
That would argue against her believing that he was God, but she could certainly accept that he was the Son of God and want her sons to tag along with him.
Yeah, definitely personal. And here again, this is a lesson with any of us with children or grandchildren or nieces or nephews, not to have a personal sense of them, not to be prideful. We have seen it too, where parents want some special thing for their children in church, in school. You know, maybe they're being disciplined by authorities in school and somehow they think that they're above all that, that they shouldn't be disciplined. Be careful with all of this. Don't have this prideful sense, because if it's about your children, it's about you too. It's very deadly. I think, keep yourself humble, keep them humble too. Very bad red flag when you're feeling that. Danny, do you have any examples of that? Well, I've seen it in schools. I certainly have, where I've had mothers or fathers come intervening. The teacher has had to discipline a child or something like that, and they come, and how can you do this? And they interfere with that. Even if that discipline is wrong, maybe there's some lessons to be learned. To get yourself in the middle of it is never a wise thing. I won't say never. Maybe there are exceptions. There are always exceptions. But be careful. Keep humble. Let your children learn lessons. Don't try to promote them. Don't try to get them into some Ivy League school that you think is so great. All of that, ambition, pride of the flesh, should be unfoldment, God's plan for you and for all.
Yeah, I think that's the key, Mary, and that's one of the things I took away, you know, in all the things I've worked on with you, with Maddie, is just not to get in the way, not to get between her and the lessons she needs to learn. I can't protect her from all of that. I can only, you know, I can support metaphysically, but I can't get in the way of that because those are important.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you can arm her for her to protect herself.
Yeah.
You arm her with what you teach her. You arm her by your own example.
Yeah. Otherwise, you are making a weakling. You're making a weakling, and that is certainly what we have found in the culture and the movement, where the children are weaklings because they haven't learned to do the work themselves. They haven't found the science for themselves. They've been overprotected, and when they get out in the world, sometimes they get schloomed. So the science is there for them, of course, but They need it. If you're always doing everything for them, they never will need it. So these are good lessons, and there were a lot of lessons in this story. And it wasn't a story, it was the truth.
I like the St. Paul in Philippians in the lesson where he points out that Christ, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation and took upon him the form of a servant and was made in the likeness of men. And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and came obedient unto death, even the death of the cross.
Yes. Yep, there again, the word servant. One other point, and this was on the forum, but I thought it was important in the Bible, in Psalms, set a watch, O Lord, before my mouth. Keep the door of my lips. Florence, you wrote on that. Do you want to say anything?
Yes, I wrote that because it's a good way, I think, here's a prayer for God to guard, I should say, you know, what you say. And if you're saying it, then you're thinking it. Because I remember when I used to do this same thing. Well, I can do this, or I hope. You know, it's always doubting God, and I'm saying the truth, but I'm always doubting God, and it comes out. My thinking of the doubt comes out with what I say. And even sometimes a practitioner would say something as, oh, yes, I know. Well, if I knew, I wouldn't be calling her, would I? You know, it's all these I realize that it is animal magnetism in its subtle ways to you know, keep me down. And when I realized that, or I got taught by Plainfield that this is what it is, then I woke up to it, not to say certain things. It's down pulling.
Thank you. This is so important. You know, we think we're praying and knowing the truth in the morning, and then we go off and we say these things to ourselves, and it is down pulling. You can't do something. You're afraid to do something.
You hope something.
Yes. And other things, too. You have to be very careful of even your expressions. You know, you feel like you're banging your head against the wall. There are just expressions people use, and if you keep repeating it, it will tend to manifest itself. So set a watch over your mouth. I know Jeremy wrote about it too. I don't know if he can speak. He's upstairs, but and too, you can watch it if you have children, with your children or with others in your family, how they're speaking. Be careful what you say. Speak the truth to yourself. Don't be speaking a lot of negativity. It can be damaging, and it's the little foxes that spoil the vine. Maybe there's some things you're used to saying to yourself, but they're not so good. So become more aware of what you're thinking, what you're saying. Okay, anyone else? One of the lessons I thought of from this story was when you give practitioner help and you have a healing, and then you give a testimony or you go over it in your mind and you forget what the practitioner did. That would be the same as the boy did not see what Jesus did. And they thought they were equal, but he was listening to God. And that's how it is for the practitioner. That's why you have to be grateful, because they're making your connection to God. Thank you. Now, that's a very good point, Sharon. It's a very good point. We don't want overly thanking a practitioner too much, and we don't want, but also just to totally forget you got the help and suddenly you did all the work, equally as bad. That's why I can tell a really grateful person, because their thanks is sincere. They will acknowledge the practitioner, but it won't be effusive. But it should be there. And if you will fall on your face, because I have done it. You don't know what the practitioner, all the work that's gone into it, and suddenly you think you did everything, and wow, this is fantastic, and pretty soon a sense of pride sets in, and you're having to pick yourself up off the floor. So it's always right, have that proper sense of gratitude for the help you've received, and certainly, first and foremost, to God and to Mrs. Eddy for giving us the science. But if your heart is really right, you will feel this right sense of gratitude, and you won't be tricked by that. Okay, anybody else on the lesson? Otherwise, we'll go to obedience. All right, we were on page 118, in the middle of the first paragraph, starting with, we shall have no faith. Let's see, who would like to read? Barely, you want to read?
Oh, okay. You mean, where do I start exactly?
We shall have no faith in evil.
Okay. The end of that paragraph. We shall have no faith in evil when faith finds a resting place and scientific understanding guides man. Honesty in every condition, under every circumstance, is the indispensable rule of obedience. To obey the principle of mathematics 99 times in 100 and then allow one numeral to make incorrect your entire problem is neither science nor obedience.
Okay, anybody on that?
Yeah, I'm thinking obedience. I read Eustace talking about obedience being like reflection. So, in other words, if you're obedient, then you're being exactly what God wants you to be, and not, you know, missing here and there. That doesn't make
sense. That's good. That's right. If you're being in a reflection, you can't have any mistakes in that.
Right.
That's a good way to look at
it. The science of it.
Yes. It's a science, and we can trust it. And I love the honesty part. In every condition, under every circumstance, I'm telling you, it doesn't matter how screwed up you are. Better to be honest. If you are honest, you're workable. If you try to cover it up or try to fool somebody or your practitioner or whoever, it's very bad. What does Mrs. Eddy say about dishonesty?
Work is divine power.
Yes.
Honesty is spiritual power. It's the other way.
Dishonesty is human weakness and forfeits divine help. You will not get God's help if you are dishonest. And that means in any little ways to count. Be honest as best you can. Be honest with yourself, with your fellow man, and certainly with God. Well, God knows, so you can't try to fool him. He knows what's in your heart. But dishonesty, that, you know, every time I think of that, you forfeit divine help. That's a huge penalty for telling lies. And I love this in first edition. And there's so many good things in first edition that are so clear. And on page 129, Mrs. Eddy says, unless a man advanced spiritually, he is not scientific. And if he is scientific, he must start honestly and journey some every day. And however long he is in reaching the desired goal, if his honesty be preserved, he will finish his course. That is an amazing statement. You're not familiar with it, do. Because along with all this, what we talked about, the sons of Zebedee, and maybe perhaps the competition and all of this going on, you know, many people become dishonest. They profess more than where they are or what they want to do. Please, stay honest. You can't lose with honesty. And even if it takes you longer, your steps will be much more secure. Do you all understand this?
Absolutely.
Yeah, good. Don't be something you're not. Be what you are, profess what you are and grow from there. Don't cover it up or lie about it. Because if his honesty be preserved, he will finish his course. Okay, anybody else on that one? All right, the next, let's see, next maybe two paragraphs, we'll have Elizabeth, would you like to read?
Sure. However keenly the human affections yearn to forgive a mistake and pass a friend over it smoothly, one sympathy can neither atone for error, advance individual growth, nor change this immutable decree of love. Keep my commandments. The guerdon of meritorious faith or trustworthiness rests on being willing to work alone with God and for Him, willing to suffer patiently for error until all error is destroyed and His rod and His staff comfort you. Self-ignorance, self-will, self-righteousness, lust, covetousness, envy, revenge, are foes to grace, peace, and progress. They must be met manfully and overcome, or they will uproot all happiness. Be of good cheer. The warfare with oneself is grand. It gives one plenty of employment, and the divine principle worketh with you, and obedience crowns persistent effort with everlasting victory. Every attempt of evil to harm good is futile and ends in the fiery punishment of the evildoer.
Thank you. Okay, the first part, yearn for to forgive a mistake or pass a friend over it smoothly. We were talking about this before, so... Can't be done, can it? I know probably all of you have tried it. I've tried it myself. Or I wish someone would do it for me. So it doesn't work. You can't do it. And this, again, this is the honesty of it all. Gotta let it come out in the open to be healed.
I think it also speaks to rebuking, too, you know. Rebuking love, like it talks about in our daily duties. You can't let these things just pass over you as well, whether it's your own mistake or something else that comes to your consciousness.
That's right.
Absolutely. It will not work. It's got to be rebuked. And certainly first with yourself and then with as it comes to you. It has to. Because if you don't rebuke it, you will be sucked into the problem. So it has to be rebuked. And it isn't ever a person. It is animal magnetism that you're rebuking. It's animal magnetism. And if you love enough, you will. And then being able to work alone with God and for Him. So... It very often, you know, you are going to be alone in this. You can't necessarily look for a whole bunch of friends to help you out. So, get used to it.
You have to do your own work, otherwise it won't do any good.
Right. That's right. You have to do your own work. You have to meet the thoughts that come to you and either handle them or realize their thoughts from God and stay with them. So you are going to be alone with God in your being, as she says, and that's a good thing. Okay, now the next. Anyone want to comment on that? Thank you, Lillian. Okay, the next. Self-ignorance. How does that work?
Well, I think it works if you're going along as a Christian Scientist and think you know everything. You've been able to demonstrate a few things, so you're getting a big ego and thinking, well, I've done those things, so I'm pretty good. and you're not seeing it for what it really is. I mean, you're ignorant of the truth.
Yes. That is perhaps the hugest one of all. You're deluded. How do you get past that? It's what Florence was saying too. Someone will call a practitioner, and everything the practitioner says is, "I know that. Oh, I've read that. I've read that a million times. I know this. I know that." If you want to meet an unhealable person, that's it. So how do you get past that? How do you get past thinking you're a know-it-all?
Back into the valley, humility.
Yeah.
Someone wrote on the forum once a few weeks ago that the best way to start a day is to start by recognizing or thinking, "I know absolutely nothing." And if I get myself in that frame of thought, then I'm open to what God has to show me.
Yes, and I think we should be down on our knees with gratitude for all we've been given. And then I think from the gratitude comes an openness to listen to, well, what's next then for me, rather than I know it all already.
Gratitude certainly does help, always. Eddie, did you want to say something? About overcoming self-ignorance? If you're there, we can't hear you, so. Well, if you continually don't overcome it, you will come upon something where you will find out you don't know very much at all. You'll have some problem.
Mrs. Eddie says, sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Mrs. Eddie says we don't know until we demonstrate. You know, it's easy. Because I know I can quote, and I feel like, you know, you start a sentence, I'll finish it from Science and Health, but it doesn't mean I know squat about it. And so I've been trying to focus more on, okay, I obviously need to prove the little that I do know and prove that I understand about to demonstrate it, because it's all well and good to say you know, but unless you're doing and demonstrating, it doesn't really mean anything.
That's exactly right. Thank you. That's why the healing of the sick and all of that, it's important that all of you take that seriously. We're all commanded to do that, every man, woman, and child. And you have opportunities all day to see the truth and to help yourself and others in that way. These situations change and clear, become better. That's the demonstrating. It's also why Mrs. Eddy was so important and Gilbert Carpenter is so important, because he shows us how Mrs. Eddy demonstrated. I never knew how she demonstrated until I read some of his things, how she demonstrated in the minutiae. And that does prove how much you really know. And never say, I always tell when I get someone who calls and tells me they know everything, I just tell them to get that out of their vocabulary. Because even if you think you do know, you can read Science and Health and you should be finding new things in it every day. It should always be unfolding. So to think you know, there's always more to learn.
Well, yeah, and even the stuff that you thought you knew should have a new layer to it. That's what's so cool about Christian Science. You can be so intimately familiar with something, but if you're really growing, you can take a story that you know inside and out or a passage or something and find even a deeper meaning to it.
Absolutely. And if you don't, you're sleeping. Should always be fresh and new. I mean, I am amazed sometimes with the Bible studies, because I think, well, we've gone over this before, maybe more than once, but there's always new things to be found, new things that come up. Each day should be fresh and new to each one of us. But self-ignorance came first, and it's very important. Many people are not aware of what they're doing, what's driving them, what's pushing them. And you need to know. You need to be acquainted with yourself. Figure out what's going on in your head. Don't be afraid to take a good look.
I think it's really humbling to when you realize that you really haven't taken the scientific statement of being into heart. You know, we say it all the time, but, you know, what really happened to me when I really thought about it, pondered it, I was like, wow, this is big. This is really huge. If I understood this, I'll be, you know, heading somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd be walking on water and walking through walls.
Well, maybe not yet, but at least I would be, you know, it means a lot.
I know I had memorized that as a child, and it took me, I finally realized, well, you know, all is infinite mind and it's infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. I had no idea what that meant. I said it so many times, I didn't know what it meant. I had to get where I knew at least a little bit of what that means. And boy, is that awful. So.
And since that's the truth, can anybody ever know all there is to know about God?
Absolutely
not. Really?
The work of infinity. So work with this self-ignorance. Get to know yourself. Get to know what drives you. Get to know what your thoughts are. Dissect the mental anatomy, as Mrs. Eddy talks about. Very, very, very important. And don't, as Janet started out with, and it's so good, don't just think you know it all, because if you do that, you create a total wall, a block of ever learning anything new. You know it all, well, fine. Good for you. I've never yet to meet anyone who really has. Never think that.
Those who think they do generally know the least.
Yes, Mrs. Eddy says that. Okay. Go ahead.
I appreciate her saying, be of good cheer, the warfare with oneself is grand. I really appreciate that. It's encouraging.
It is.
Because there's so much warfare to do with oneself.
Right. And that's, you know, that is a quote that we often hear. So now you know this is where it is. It's in the article on obedience. I love it, too. And you should have your books marked. Be of good cheer. The warfare with oneself is grand. It gives one plenty of employment. And the divine principle worketh with you. And obedience crowns persistent effort with everlasting victory. It's a beautiful statement. And it is so encouraging. You're right, Fairly. And we have plenty of employment, so never think you don't have anything to do, because you have plenty to do. And then, every attempt of evil to harm good is futile and ends in the fiery punishment of the evildoer. Wow. That is not nice.
Fiery punishment.
Yes.
That sounds like a good end for a watch, too.
It does. It does. We'll have to do that.
Yeah, seriously. Let's lock that on the end of one of our watches.
Really.
And remember, that is the effect of divine love. It is a law of annihilation to anything unlike itself.
Yeah, and we can. We work with it. Start now working with this. That one sentence. To know it. You know, we say things like evil goes back on itself and destroys itself with accelerated force. All evil can do is destroy itself. That's all it can do, because it's unreal.
And there's nothing personal about it.
No.
So go for it.
Yep. Yeah. And certainly in our watches now and all of this terrorism talk, we can work with these strong statements of truth and know it is the truth, because it is. So this bell has rung, and let's see, I think I will end with miscellaneous writings, page 346. The origin of evil. The origin of evil is the problem of ages. It confronts each generation anew. It confronts Christian Science. The question is often asked, if God created only the good, whence comes the evil? To this question, Christian Science replies, evil never did exist as an entity. It is but a belief that there is an intelligence, there is an opposite intelligence to God. This belief is a species of idolatry and is not more true or real than that an image graven on wood or stone is God. The mortal admission of the reality of evil perpetuates faith in evil, and the scriptures declare that to whom ye yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants ye are. This leading, self-evident proposition of Christian Science, that good being real, its opposite is necessarily unreal, needs to be grasped in all its divine requirements. Just three simple paragraphs to that question, and it's one, as we're dealing with error, we must be well familiar with. We go at it with a vengeance to destroy it, and on the other hand, we know it's unreality, and we prove it's unreality. We're not just talking the words. We're demonstrating the truth. Okay, so thank you all for your comments, and we'll
okay,
go on to
have a good service. Sorry, glad you finally
everyone.
Glad you made it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.